If the crucifixion had been today, at the time when Rod got up to start teaching class, right at 9 a.m., that's when they would have been putting nails in his hands and in his feet and lifting him up for all to see and for all to mock. That's when the pain, the real pain, that's when it begins. And all through class, as we were listening to Rod talk and as we were discussing this idea of being God-focused, all through that class, Jesus would have been striving to lift himself up just to breathe. And then, as we sing and as we worship God, still now, during this time, right now, he'd be rubbing up against that coarse wood, just trying to breathe. And when we finish our worship, right around noon, we still have a ways to go, that's the halfway point for him. That's that point where he's 3 hours on the cross and he has 3 hours more to go. And it is at that moment, at the brightest time of day, right at noon, where a very significant event occurs. Matthew, Mark, Luke all record the time that it happens, the length that it happens, and it is this darkness that comes upon the land. Now from the sixth hour, darkness fell upon all the land until the ninth hour. When the sixth hour came, darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour. It was now about the sixth hour, and darkness fell over the whole land until the ninth hour, because the sun was obscured and the veil of the temple was torn in two. And so I want to talk about this darkness. With all three of these Gospels mentioning it, with them mentioning the time, it is of significance. And I would love to tell you all of the significance. I don't know all of it. But I have been pondering what that darkness meant. Luke records that it was because the sun was obscured, is how the New American Standard puts it. But if you look at it literally in the Greek, it was the sun failing, which is an incredible event. You think about this, middle of the day, and it's not like some clouds have rolled in. The indication is the sun just stopped working properly as Jesus hangs on the cross. And that must have been a terrifying thing, because that's the most constant blessing that we have. I mean, we just accept and expect the sun to come up every day. So much so that in the Ecclesiastes, when Solomon is writing and he's saying, here, life just goes in a circle and nothing changes, he brings up the sun. It goes up, it comes down. It goes up, it comes down. It's always going to do that. But on this day, in the middle of the day, when the sun is brightest, it stopped being so. And darkness came over the land. This wasn't the first time that darkness had come. It was the first time darkness had come on God's people. In Exodus chapter 10, in the plagues, the ninth plague, falling only upon the Egyptians and not on the Israelites, but upon the Egyptians, it says that it was so dark that you could feel the darkness for 3 days. They felt that. Now, it wasn't that dark this time. I know that because Jesus is going to quote from Psalm 22 and be misunderstood, and somebody's going to be able to go and run and get him something, some wine to drink, and go bring it back to him so they can see it's not pitch perfect dark. But nonetheless, darkness has come upon the land. And when you leave today, imagine going outside and the sun's not shining for 3 hours. And as Jesus hangs on the cross, that's what he's experiencing. And that's what those who are experiencing, who are seeing him, are experiencing. And I've wondered, what is this darkness? What does the darkness mean? And there are a few things that I want you to consider. I think they're all true. The first one is darkness represents this idea of ignorance or blindness. The people who walk around in darkness. We had read for us this morning Matthew chapter 4. Verses 12 through 17, and it's talking about Jesus coming in his mission on earth, when he starts spreading the gospel. And it says that it's a fulfillment of a prophecy in Isaiah. If you go down to verse 15, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, by the way of the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people who were sitting in darkness saw a great light, and those who were sitting in the land and shadow of death, upon them a light dawned. These were the people who were described in Romans chapter 1 as having set aside knowledge of God and acknowledging Him. For even though they knew God, they did not honor Him as God or give thanks, but they became futile in their speculations, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools. And so darkness describes this idea of being ignorant, of not understanding what you're doing or seeing where you are going. And then it says that Jesus comes and He gives the light to the darkened land, to the people. Jesus' ministry is going to a dark land and giving them light. And He describes Himself in John 8 and verse 12, I am the light. And now as He hangs on the cross, darkness takes hold once more. What was it that Jesus said? Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. The people were darkened in their understanding, and the sun reflected their ignorance, their lack of understanding. Darkness is an indication of wickedness, of evil. So often we refer to it as this contrast between light and dark. It is in Luke chapter 22 when Jesus is arrested. Luke 22 and verse 53, starting in verse 52, Jesus said to the chief priests and officers of the temple and elders who had come against Him, have you come out with swords and clubs as you would against a robber? While I was with you daily in the temple, you did not lay your hands on me. But this hour and the power of darkness are yours. The next time darkness is going to be mentioned in Luke, it is on the sixth hour, noon, when darkness falls upon the land. It is an indication that this is the moment that the enemy seems to triumph. Ephesians 6 and verse 12 talks about our battle. Our battle is against the forces of darkness. And at this point, when darkness reigns in the land of Jerusalem and Jesus is on the cross, it is those who are rebuking Him, mocking Him, spitting on Him, they're the ones rejoicing. And it is those who are righteous, who love God, are the ones that are mourning. This is the time of darkness. This is the time of evil. We sing in our song, 10,000 Angels. When they nailed Him to the cross, His mother stood nearby. He said, Woman, behold thy son. He cried, I thirst for water. But they gave Him none to drink. Then the sinful work of man was done. And from noon to three, the sun reflects our wickedness. That we have turned against God. And dare I say, this is our darkest hour. Have we ever, as a people, ever done anything worse than reject the Son of God, put nails through His hands and feet, and crucify Him? The darkness reflects the wickedness. But it's an odd thing, because at the very same time, darkness has another representation. And it represents the day of the Lord and His victory. So it is, at the same time, it is mankind's wickedness and lowest point. It is also a beckoning of God's victory, which, by the way, is doom. If you look at Joel 2, and you might be familiar with Joel 2 because we frequently talk about Joel 2 in contrast to Acts 2. That's because this prophecy is about the day of Pentecost and the events surrounding these things, including, I would say, the cross. So in Joel chapter 2, starting in verse 1, it says, "Blow a trumpet in Zion and sound an alarm on my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble, for the day of the Lord is coming. Surely it is near, a day of darkness and gloom, a day of clouds and thick darkness. As the dawn is spread over the mountains, so there is a great and mighty people. There has never been anything like it, nor will there be again after it to the years of many generations." You go down to verse 10. "Before them the earth quakes, the heavens tremble, the sun and moon grow dark, and the stars lose their brightness." And then specifically what is quoted in Acts chapter 2, Joel chapter 2 verse 30. "I will display wonders in the sky and on the earth, blood, fire, and columns of smoke. The sun will be turned into darkness and the moon into blood before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And it will come about that whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be delivered. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there will be those who escape, as the Lord has said, even among the survivors whom the Lord calls." And so here he's talking about the great coming day of the Lord. And it was going to be represented, it was going to be visually seen in darkness. There's a reason for that. If you go to Amos chapter 5, the people of God were always looking for the day of the Lord. They were always waiting for Jesus. They were always waiting for God to come, for there to be this victory over their enemies. And so they would call upon God for his day. And he says, "Alas, you who are longing for the day of the Lord, for what purpose will the day of the Lord be to you? It will be darkness and not light. As a man flees from a lion and a bear meets him, or goes home, leans his hand against the wall and a snake bites him, will not the day of the Lord be darkness instead of light, even gloom with no brightness in it?" The darkness represents this powerful doom of God. And the warning here is, it's towards you. And so if we look at the next one, and I think this one is the most natural one. When it gets dark, you think of doom. It is this ominous feeling that washes over you. It's just bizarre. You remember when we had the eclipse? By the way, this was no eclipse. The longest eclipses last is about 8 minutes. This is 3 hours. But I remember we only had a partial of the eclipse, but you went, looked outside and it just looked wrong. Something didn't feel right. And I remember many times when it's not some supernatural thing or even some astrological thing, but it's just a cloud. It is this a thunderstorm so thick that the sun can barely penetrate it, and our land turns dark. And you know it's time to get inside because something is coming. For 3 hours in the middle of the day with no explanation, it has grown dark. And there should be a terror over them. In Genesis 15 and verse 12, it talks about Abraham and darkness. But this darkness is a terror that falls upon him. It says, "Now when the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abraham. And behold, terror and great darkness fell upon him." Again and again, the scriptures refers to this idea of darkness being a terror, a doom, a gloom. The other passages in Matthew and 2 Peter are in reference to being cast into the outer darkness. When God wants us to understand hell, he talks about darkness. So these people, when they look at Jesus and they see the blood coming from him and the sun not working properly, no matter how much fear was digging up inside them, no matter how much trepidation, no matter how ominous it felt, it was never enough. That was the Son of God they put up there. That was the Son of God they're watching. The wrath of God is being held back, and their doom is so close. For 3 hours, darkness. As Jesus gets weaker and weaker and then dies. And what happens then? When Jesus dies, this is the Son of God, what happens then? It was too late. They couldn't, there was no longer this time where they can say, we're sorry, we've done something horribly wrong. We're going to get you down from the cross. We're going to get you medical attention. We're going to save you and turn our attention to God and follow Him. It's too late. They have done the deed. It's all over. Should there not be ultimate wrath right then? End of the world. The first sign of hope after Jesus' death is not the earthquake, and it's not the veil being torn. Those things are destruction. You want to know what the first sign of hope is? The light returned. We're told that it was dark from the sixth hour till the ninth hour. Jesus dies in the ninth hour. What happened then? It's 3:00 in the afternoon. The light came back. Jesus didn't die because he was overpowered by evil men. He died so that those of us in darkness, physically, realistically revealed at his death, could see the light. He died so that those who were spiritually dead could be made alive to God. He died so that those entrapped by Satan could serve the Son of God instead. He died for you and for me. But it was indeed our darkest hour. We just sang this song, At the Cross. Well, might the sun in darkness hide and shut his glories in when Christ, the mighty maker, died for man, the creature's sin. It was for us. In 1 Corinthians 11, it says that the Lord Jesus, in the night in which he was betrayed, took bread. And when he had given thanks, he broke it and said, "This is my body, which is for you. Do this in remembrance of me." In the same way, he took the cup also after supper, saying, "This cup is the new covenant in my blood. Do this as often as you drink it in remembrance of me." Let us remember the 3 hours of darkness when the light of the world died in the day of dark.